On Sunday, July 24th at 11 p.m., Shug in My Bowl presents pianist, composer, bandleader, Jerry Allen. Join us as we discuss parts of Jerry Allen's career, pet projects, and upcoming events as we help keep this listener-supported experiment alive. That's Sunday, July 24th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Shug in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name is Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening is Jerry Allen. She has been a guest on Shug in My Bowl in the past. We are so ecstatic to have her back again. What we're offering this evening for your membership pledge of $25 is a CD. It is titled Perfection, featuring Jerry Allen, David Murray, and Terry Lynn Carrington. All three have been Sugar guests. I'm so happy. The name of their ensemble is called the Mac Power Trio, and this was released on Motema Records earlier this year. It's in dedication to Ornette Coleman. We'll be playing selections from it, and hopefully you will pledge your support. And as a thank you for your generous support, we will give you this CD. There is a limit of 10, so act now. And the number to call is 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Or you can go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web, Sugar in My Bowl, happening now.
My soul, I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling, I want some sugar. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with
Jerry Allen.
Jerry Allen, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl again.
Hey, Joyce, how are you?
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
The last time we spoke was with regard to Henry Grimes, his being honored at the Vision Festival, and this was your first appearance at the Vision Festival. What was that like for you?
Yes, it was really, really a great experience to be there, first of all, to honor Henry Grimes and to see the outpouring of respect and acknowledgement that he received from the audience, to have a chance to play again with Andrew Cyril and Graham Haynes, who I hadn't played with in so many years. And also just to get this whole experience of the community, this community that I have not really been exposed to.
Right.
I'm very excited by this grassroots community.
It was really nice to see you there as well. That was a wonderful opportunity for us who've been over the years, and to see you there. It also reinforced for me exactly how, I'm not quite sure how to describe it, but how versatile your playing is.
Oh, thank you. I'm at the University of Pittsburgh now, and one of my new colleagues, Michael Heller, I know has been involved with the Vision Festival through the years, so I was really happy to actually have a chance to experience it. He had talked about how special the festival is, and now I've seen it for myself, and really exciting to see the kinds of committed fans and this whole artistic, you know, poets and visual artists and dancers and all these different communities of people under this creative form that are showing up there. And, you know, I found that really exciting to see. Yeah, it was great.
During that time, also, we had tried to spend some more time with you, but you were traveling. You were doing a lot of traveling. What is that like for you, going out there so often?
Well, you know, I'm very grateful to be able to do this music and to have the opportunity to do what I love. And I find that through the years, you practice and you focus on a goal as a musician and whatever it is you do. And then to be able to kind of do the things that you've been working toward for a good part of your life, it's a blessing and it's a privilege. So I'm very grateful to be able to, like, have an opportunity to play with Henry Grimes and Andrew Cyril and then the different really great musicians whose paths I've crossed through the years. And it's a great thing. I could never complain about it. I have to pace myself as I continue to do this so that I can manage my health as I get a little older. But it's been great.
Well, that, I guess that's the thing that I was wondering about. How do you physically manage touring? Because you're not just doing the States. You go to Europe, and then as soon as you finish something in Europe, in this case, you would come back and did something at Kennedy Center, and then you came to New York, and then you continued, I guess.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I was thinking about when I first came to New York, people like Betty Carter and Art Blakey were hiring young musicians and kind of grooming them and giving them a chance to be out on the road. And being around Betty, who really mentored me, she was always busy. She was always working, and that was a part of what success meant, if you're doing the work. And so I was kind of raised looking at it that way. So you just pace yourself. You try to hold on to the piece that you need each night to do the performance, because, say, 90% of the process, sometimes it's just about getting to the place, and you have this, like, maybe 10% of it is the performance. So you always have to just kind of keep that piece in a special kind of space so that when it comes time to play that you have all that you need to share with the people that are coming to hear you and the musicians that are there. And it was interesting because I just did our New Jersey Performing Arts Jazz Camp for all females. And Jeff Watts was talking about this too, this idea of how you have to really pace your energy as you're traveling. You're always kind of thinking about the end result of the day and saving that core energy for when it's time to play. And I guess some things kind of learn through the years what it is that sustains you from day to day.
Thank you.
So do you want to tell us about the camp that you just completed?
Oh, yes. It was really exciting to hear these young women. They're coming in between the ages of, I would say, 16, and some of them were around 24, 25 years old. And we had a wonderful group of musicians, a very talented group of young women. We had drummers, we had trombonists, we had piano players and vocalists, and a really great faculty, including Jeff Watts, as I mentioned. We also had Bruce Williams. We had Linda O.
Oh, wow. Bassist.
We had, yes, a wonderful bassist. We had Kenetra Miller from Howard University, who has the Afro Blue Ensemble. And, you know, she's won about 13 Downbeat Awards consecutively for Best Jazz Vocal Group, University Group. And we had Ellen Rowe, who's the chair at University of Michigan and really fine musician and composer, orchestrator. We had Tia Fuller come through.
Yay.
And, yes, Stefan Harris came through.
Oh, okay.
And a really great group of musicians. Mark Gross, who's jazz artistic director there, and Allison Scott Williams, who kind of invited me into this wonderful idea. And it's really inspiring. I mean, the young women were composing their own music. We're also dealing with, like, the core tradition. And so it was a great experience.
So what was your focus when you were there? I suspect piano playing. Were there other things that you covered?
Well, yes, we went over to the Institute of Jazz Studies, and the young women got to see the Mary Lou Williams, some of the items there that are in the archive. We had a wonderful kind of presentation by a number of the archivists there who talked about all of the things, the rich collection of materials that are there. They talked about career and how, as an archivist, that this is an interesting career that people that are interested in music but not necessarily performing might look at. So it was great. It was a lot of information, and they really enjoyed it.
Well, that was a great segue to my next point that I wanted to discuss, Mary Lou Williams. The focus of Mary Lou Williams is an ongoing passion project. How did you wind up falling in love with Mary Lou Williams?
Well, when I was at Howard University, I started to find out about her music, and by the time I actually graduated from Howard and moved on to the University of Pittsburgh, I started to kind of look at her in a more research way to check out more about her history and accomplishments. And through Nathan Davis, my mentor there, he had a relationship with Mary Lou Williams. I think he had had conversations with her. Of course, her family is still in Pittsburgh. And I got to meet a lot of musicians that knew her and sort of had the opportunity to start doing research on her then. And then when I moved to New York, I met Father Peter O'Brien during a concert at St. Peter's, and I was doing some of her music, and he approached me at that time and said that he had a lot of music that he'd like to share with me of hers, and that was the beginning of a wonderful, rich friendship.
Yeah, and unfortunately, Father Peter O'Brien transitioned, but his love of Mary Lou Williams and dedication is going to last forever.
That's right, and you know, we're all so grateful to him for all that he shared of her with us through the years. And, you know, we've been doing her mass for many years with Carmen Lundy and Professor George Shirley, who was the first African-American tenor to sing for the Met. A number of people who, through the years, Andrew Cyril, of course, who played with her when he was just 17 years old.
Right.
So there's been a lot of collective energy around her work. She's a great inspiration.
Watch your story, morning glory. What makes you look so blue? The way that you've been acting, I don't know what to do. For I love you. Sure as one and one makes two. What's your story, morning glory? Got a feeling there's a lot you're concealing. Oh, won't you let me know your point of view? What's your story, morning glory? You've got me worried too. The postman came this morning and left a note for you. Did you read it? Then you know that I love you. What's your story, morning glory? Give an answer to this patient romantic. Oh, won't you tell me that you love me too? Thank you. But your story, morning glory, you've got me worried too. The postman came this morning and left a note for you. Did you read it? Then you know that I love you. What's your story, morning glory? Give an answer to this patient romantic. Oh, won't you tell me that you love me too?
Recently, as you mentioned, did a piece called A Conversation with Mary Lou, which was first performed at the Harlem Stage, kind of commissioned us to do the piece. And then this past year, we did it at the Kennedy Center. And Esapetha Murkison is the director of the piece, and Sarah Jasmine Griffin wrote the book, kind of based on a lot of the materials that she found in the archive there at Institute of Jazz Studies at Rutgers. And then Carmen Lundy was the spoken word and the vocal word of Mary Lou Williams. And we had Kenny Davis, the bassist, and also Casa Overall, the drummer, who performed this. And it's interesting because we got to hear her words, and that's very powerful to kind of hear the artist speaking directly to you in that way. And Sarah did an amazing job with the book. And of course, it's really great working with Pesa because she really is a gracious, powerful director who brought a lot out of all of us that we didn't know was there.
Wow. Do you know whether there's a chance that that will make another appearance, whether it'll come back to New York?
Oh, that would be great. I mean, we hope so. We got to do it about a year and a half ago, so hopefully we'll get to do it every year, every other year. So I hope it'll have a life.
Oh, I hope so, too. When I first met you, you had told me about Mary Lou Williams, and I wasn't as knowledgeable at that time. The only thing that I had been exposed to was the CBS Sunday Morning appearance. Oh, man, I think that was in the 80s or something. And I didn't have as much exposure. So when you and Farrell were talking about Mary Lou Williams, I was like, okay, well, I'll learn a little something here. And then I met Carol Bash, who did the film.
Right.
You were involved in that as well.
Yes. As a matter of fact, we played the film at the all-female jazz camp for the young women. And it's such an inspiring film. Again, speaking of her in a way that would have reflected an accuracy. And we know that because Follow Brian was with Carol through the whole 10 years that she was working on it. And it boiled down to this very powerful and accurate and emotional experience through her dedication of all those 10 years. And it's really wonderful. It's a wonderful piece. You really get an experience of the artist. You really feel, okay, this is the artist, and this is this complex human being who was trailblazing through all these different eras of music, and this humanitarian who really put others before herself. And she's a great inspirational story about a great human being.
As a matter of fact, it was rather emotional for me when the screening took place at Harlem Stage. It was not long after Father O'Brien had transitioned. It was mentioned, his transitioning and his involvement. And I had interviewed Father O'Brien and Carol Bash when she was making the film. So it was
very moving.
Father O'Brien was a laugh riot. He had a wonderful sense of humor. And he,
yes, he was.
And the amount of time that we spent talking, I mean, it was, you know, I think it was probably only going to be like a half hour, and it just went on, and I really appreciate all the stories he told.
Yes, he was a very, very special person, only one of a kind, and always going to see theater. He was on top of everything. He knew all of the hippest stuff to do, you know, and he just a really wonderful person, a wonderful, he was like a part of our family, really. Mm. We were very close. He's very much missed.
Yeah. Between the last time you were on Sugar in My Bowl and now, in addition to the Mary Lou Williams work, you've had several releases. One of them being the what is called the Mac Power Trio. That would be Murray, Allen, and Carrington. David Murray, you, and Terry Lynn Carrington.
Right.
When you performed at the Winter Jazz Festival, was that the first time that you were trying it out?
Yes, that's right. And David called Terry and I and had this idea that we should play together. And we tried it out, as you put it, and it was a blast.
Yeah.
We had a great time, and it made sense for us to continue to do more. So that's what we've been doing. We have a record that came out earlier this year, and I really enjoy this setting. It's kind of challenging for me in a lot of ways, and it's also kind of a terrain that I enjoy very much, working with Terry, who I've been playing with for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, David is a musician who brings a lot of possibilities out of my playing, and I just really enjoy the combination of the two of those really great musicians and what comes out of that chemistry. So I've been having a great time.
And the name of the release is called Perfection. As a matter of fact, we're offering it this evening for a membership pledge to WBAI, and people can call or go to give the number to WBAI.org. And I've noticed you actually have one of your compositions for Father Peter O'Brien. in addition to recording that Terry Lynn Carrington wrote for you, Jerry Rigged.
Ah, I know. I'm so honored, you know. Terry is a very generous soul. Mm-hmm. She really is.
Thank you.
and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program of which you are listening, and my name is Joyce Jones. We are in the midst of a fund membership drive, and what we're offering during this program is a CD titled Perfection. It features our guest for this evening, Jerry Allen, and it also includes other former Sugar guests, David Murray and Terry Lynn Carrington. The name of their ensemble is the Mac Power Trio, and the release is titled Perfection. It is in tribute to Ornette Coleman. The title cut, Perfection, has never been released, but we're offering it to you right now for your pledge of $25, your membership pledge. And this is just a thank you for being a member and showing your support to listener-supported WBAI-FM in New York. What you're listening to right now is Mirror of Youth. This is from Perfection. Before that, we heard Jerry Rigged. This is also from Perfection. Before that, we heard For Father Peter O'Brien. Father Peter O'Brien is the manager and friend and just all-around cool guy, the keeper, lack of a better phrase, cheerleader for Mary Lou Williams, and we are all grateful for his generosity. He did great work while he was here, and he will be missed by many. Before that, we heard What's Your Story, Morning Glory, a Mary Lou Williams composition, sung by Carmen Lundy from her Soul to Soul release that was last year from Frasier Productions. Jerry Allen is the pianist featured on this recording. Before that, we heard Gemini, Mary Lou Williams' composition, recorded by Jerry Allen from the Zodiac Suite Revisited. Before that, we heard That Girl from Jerry Allen's 2013 Motema Records release, Motown and Motor City Inspirations, and that's Jerry Allen on solo piano. Before that, we heard Cycles and Seasons, Mac Power Trio. This is from the Mac Power Trio release Perfection that was released earlier this year on Motema Records. Before that, we heard our theme from Nina Simone, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl. Nina Simone from the very best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967, 1972. That is an RCA BMG compilation released in 1998. The recording was originally recorded in 1967. Stay tuned for On the Bandstand with our associate producer Hank Williams, and find out what Jerry Allen and former Sugar guests are up to so you can see them live. This is WBAI New York. Show your generous support by calling 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Or go to give the number 2 WBAI.org. That's give the number 2 WBAI.org, and for your pledge of membership, $25, we will thank you with a CD titled Perfection from the Mac Power Trio. Stay tuned.
Jazz fans, this is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for July 24th. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar in My Bowl guests so you can see them live. This week's show features pianist Jerry Allen. She'll be at the Village Vanguard from August 2nd through 7th, and we have a special premium for you in the Summer Pledge Drive edition. Allen's teamed up with saxophonist David Murray and drummer Terry Lynn Carrington four combo they're calling the Mac Power Trio. Their new release is called Perfection. We have CDs available for a pledge of only $25, which also includes a year's station membership. Call 516-620-3602 right now, or go online to give to WBAI.org. That's give to, the number 2, WBAI.org. There are still a few autographed copies left of Quincy Troup's book, Miles and Me, about his relationship with Miles Davis, for a pledge of only $35 as well. We'll repeat all that at the end of the segment, but right now we have music listings for you. Harpist Brandy Younger has weekly Sunday brunch sets at Minton's in Harlem. Bassist William Parker and drummer Hamid Drake are at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Dizzy's Club on the 26th and 27th. Pianist Barry Harris leads a trio at the Village Vanguard from July 26th through 31st, and will be at Harlem's Marcus Garvey Park on August 5th for a free outdoor performance as part of the Jazzmobile series. Vocalist Diane Reeves is at Queensbridge Park on the 27th for a free outdoor performance as part of the City Parks Foundation Summer Stage series. Vocalist Catherine Russell is at Brooklyn's Metro Tech Center on the 28th for a free outdoor lunchtime performance, and that's part of the Brooklyn Academy of Music's R&B Festival. Details for that are at BAM.org. Percussionist Mino Sinelu is at the Newark Museum's Jazz in the Garden series on the 28th. Guitarist Mark Rebo is at Bowery Ballroom with the Young Philadelphians for a CD release party on the 28th. Pianist Mark Carey hosts the Harlem Sessions at Ginny's Supper Club on the 28th, and that continues Thursdays in August. He'll also be at Queensbridge Park on the 31st for a free outdoor performance, and that's part of Summer Stage. Guitarist Julian Lodge leads a trio at the Jazz Standard on the 28th through the 29th. Drummer Will Calhoun is at Iridium with guitarist Vernon Reed's Power Trio on the 29th as well. Vocalist Tana Alexa is at Traverse Park's 78th Street Plaza on the 31st for a free outdoor performance as part of the Jackson Heights Jazz Festival, and at the Side Door in Old Lyme, Connecticut on August 5th. Looking further ahead, saxophonist Ahmed Abdullah is at Harlem's Rendell Memorial Presbyterian Church on August 2nd for two lunchtime sets, and that's part of the Harlem Afternoon Jazz Series. Vocalist Dee Dee Bridgewater is at Brooklyn's Metro Tech Center for a free outdoor concert at noon, and that's also part of BAM's R&B Festival. Finally, saxophonist Gary Bartz is at Smoke with Heads of State from August 5th through 7th. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news. And Suga is spelled S-U-G-A. If you're on Twitter or Facebook, look for us there too. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on the website. If you like what we do, please help WBAI stay on the air by pledging whatever you can, and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. Again, copies of the Mac Power Trio's Perfection CD and autographed copies of Quincy Troup's Miles and Me book are available for a pledge of $25 or $35 respectively. Both include a year's station membership. The number to call is 516-620-3602, or go online to give to WBAI.org. That's 516-620-3602, or give to WBAI.org. This is Hank Williams signing off. Our bi-weekly schedule has us off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on WBAI on Sunday, August 7th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
I'm Calvin Brooks. You are listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Station you'll ever hear.
Terry, she produced this record, and I think she did an amazing job at kind of organizing everything for us. Yeah, she's a great producer as well, just being a really great drummer. She's got a lot of vision, and she's got a real far-reaching interest. So she's able to pull in people from all kind of different genre that are, they're all connected, but they're like really, she's got a wide reach.
Yeah.
And I find that so interesting and inspiring about how she's able to mobilize different groups of people to do these great projects that she's interested in.
Well, the thing I thought was really great about this release is as of last December, all three of you have been on this program. So it was like,
oh,
yay!
Oh, how cool. Thank you for the support. I really appreciate that.
I also noticed on the recording you have some other special guests, Charnette Moffett on bass and Craig Harris on trombone, who
yes.
we love as well,
mm-hmm.
and Wallace Roney Jr. on trumpet.
Yes, yeah, Wally's on the record, and I'm really excited that David, you know, and Terry wanted to invite him to be a part of it. So the connection was people that had some kind of relationship with Ornette Coleman,
uh-huh.
who's our hero, and Wally did have a chance to play with Ornette Coleman.
Oh, wow.
Which to me is just incredible. He had a chance to play with him at the Celebrate Brooklyn during his birthday party.
Oh, yes.
And what an amazing moment. Wally was invited to play on the record, and Charnette, of course, who I worked with Ornette Coleman for about 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
In that quartet with Donardo.
Thank you.
And then David has a relationship with Ornette as well.
Sure.
And so it was just fitting to honor for us to acknowledge how much he has meant to all of us, the great icon he is, but also having given us this opportunity to be able to connect with him. Just amazing blessing to have. So yes, that's where the title Perfection. David found the piece of music. Bobby Bradford had the music. And so this was the first time the piece was recorded.
Wow.
And had not been, from my understanding, performed previously.
And it was arranged by David Murray as well.
Right.
I noticed that David Murray, he wrote a song, The David, Jerry, and Terry Show. understood he wanted to call the group David, Jerry, and Terry.
Yes, he did. He's got a very interesting sense of humor, David. But we overruled him since it's an equal opportunity trio.
Right.
So we didn't feel quite comfortable with that. It's his tune, so he has complete control over that.
Right. Are you working on something for yourself as a leader?
Well, you know, I've been really thinking a lot about that, and I am not at this point, but it's kind of simmering and marinating, so to speak. I am working on a number of other projects. I have a film that I'm working on. And
really?
So there's a lot of different things happening. I'm meeting a few deadlines, and then I'm going to be ready to start working on that record for sure.
Well, there's one project that you were working on, and as a matter of fact, Susan Rosenberg came up to me with the Errol Garner project. How did you wind up getting involved in that? Concerts by
Well, that's really been a big part of my life for the last 2 years. And so Susan was good enough to approach me at the University of Pittsburgh about an interest in sharing this archive that she had been entrusted with by her aunt, Martha Glazier, who was Errol Garner's manager and great friend for many, many years, partner, so to speak. And this very rich archive includes photographs and memorabilia, all kinds of artwork from album covers and correspondence from iconic folk like presidents to Errol Garner. And so we at Pitt acquired it, the University Library System acquired that last year. And that happened at the same time Sony released Concert by the Sea. And that was last September, 60 years. And so there's just a lot of great things going on around the Errol Garner Archive. And of course, Mary Lou Williams was a great advocate of Errol Garner's and spoke highly of him. And that I'm at the University of Pittsburgh. So there's this interesting history around all these great Pittsburgh musicians who really made a big impact on the different shifts in the music, from Earl Father Hines to Billy Eckstein to Ray Brown, to all of these musicians who came out of Pittsburgh. Well, Art Blakey is another one who has created a huge impact on the music. So working around the Errol Garner Archive has been exciting because you get these different piecing parts of history together through these correspondences and photographs. So it's been wonderful.
With a great glow of wonderful friendship and a great glow of the assumption that you're all going to be thrilled right out of your shoes tonight. The mighty man of them all, my dear friend, Errol Garner. Errol.
Thank you.
Susan Rosenberg.
So again, she did approach us at the university because she felt that it would be a great place for the Garner Archive to be. So I've just known Susan now for the last few years, but of course she's very important in many different ways in her own right.
Hi, my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with
Susan Rosenberg.
Susan Rosenberg, thank you for joining Sugar in My Bowl to discuss your relationship to Errol Gardner, Concerts by the Sea. I understand your aunt was involved. She's a manager?
That's correct, Martha Glaser. Yes, Martha Glaser was my aunt. She is no longer alive, but she was Errol Garner's manager, advocate, producer, and friend for much of his career from 1950 until he died in 1977.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did this project wind up falling into your lap?
Yeah, that's exactly the right way to put it. Well, what happened is that I was my aunt's only living relative. And she, after Mr. Garner died in 1977, they had formed a publishing company for his music. And she spent the next 30 years trying to continue his musical legacy by reproducing music that they had made and that he had made, and did that until very near the end of her life. And but part of that was that because he was her sole client for all of those years, she kept everything related to his life and his career. And about 10 years ago, people who were in her company and in her business contacted me and said, you need to take a look at what there is in this collection of things. And so I began to go to her office and look and talk to her about what she had. And it turned out that she had 30 years of everything that had been created in his archive, from over 7,000 musical tapes of recordings to 5,000, 6,000 photographs, to contracts, to legal documents, to receipts from tours. Just everything. And it fell to me and my friends to sort of take hand of this and see what was there and what we could do with it. What we did was we took it all and we put it into storage. And we kept it there for a couple of years, not really knowing what to do with it, not really understanding the incredible breadth and depth of what there was. And my aunt really wanted it to be donated to some kind of an institution. And her whole raison d'etre had been to promote his legacy and to keep the beautiful music that he created alive and current. So after a couple of years, we realized that the tapes were going to possibly degrade. So we went back to storage and we began to look at it, analyze it, archive it, and then digitize these 7,000 tapes and 500 discs and hundreds and hundreds of cassettes. And my aunt was still alive when we were beginning to do this process. And so essentially what happened was we hired an archivist who did a wonderful job with us, and we archived and digitized the entire collection and then donated it to the University of Pittsburgh, which we did in 2015. It took a couple of years to do this, and we did it this way rather than just take all these boxes and just send them someplace is that we really didn't know what there was, what exactly was in the archive. And also because in doing it in this way, we kind of jumped the line and gave it to the university almost ready to be made available to the public. And the reason we chose Pittsburgh was because Errol Garner was born and raised in Pittsburgh, and because Pittsburgh has this incredible history of African American music and jazz in particular. The people who come from Pittsburgh, it's almost like the stars were aligned, but from Art Tatum to Billy Strayhorn to Mary Lou Williams to Ahmed Jamal and on. And I guess the other reason is because the University of Pittsburgh had just brought into their jazz studies program Jerry Allen, the pianist.
Okay.
And so it was like a perfect match. And she has been incredible in doing the work of bringing the archive to Pittsburgh, of exposing the city of Pittsburgh to this music, and then getting the whole university library system on board. And the archive is now publicly accessible and available, and people are already using it. So it's been an amazing experience, really.
I was wondering whether any of the tapes, did it include interviews as well?
Oh, yes. Lots of interviews.
Wow.
Interviews with musicians, with Mr. Garner, with Martha Glaser. You know, I think what became clear is that he was a global star. He popularized jazz for millions of people around the world. And that's what you get from the depth of this archive and an understanding of it, plus all of this incredible music.
The complete Concert by the Sea release, it was released last year. How did you decide that this would be the thing that would first be released from the archives?
Well, you know, you go out with the best, right? You leave
right.
with the best. So Concert by the Sea was recorded in 1955 and released in 1956 by Columbia. And at that original release, I think there were 11 tracks on it. And when we were in the archive and we were digitizing the music, we found a number of tapes that were labeled Concert by the Sea. And so when we digitized them, we realized that the archive had the full, complete concert in its proper order, with actual interviews that were also recorded of Garner and the rest of his musicians at the end of that concert, as well as the announcer and, like, the whole concert. And that had never been released. So since that was such a big, it was probably his most profound selling album, and because it was considered such a classic and one of the great outdoor concert jazz albums, we said, well, let's see if we can convince Columbia/Sony to do a re-release of it in its complete version. And that's what we did. And you know, it was nominated for a Grammy in historical category. And it's an amazing rendition. Part of what was able to happen was to really work on the sound of it, because it was originally an outdoor concert. It still is. But the ability to make it sound cleaner, we didn't change the music, but we really elevated the sonic quality through a variety of these processes. So that was an amazing and wonderful experience to bring that back. The critical acclaim for it has been great.
Now, is there a plan to create some type of exhibit that could travel?
Well, there's a couple of plans. I think, you know, getting this archive and having this happen and being the shepherd of it, which has been sort of how I have looked at it in conjunction with Jerry Allen and a few other people, is that there's a lot of content in it about history. And that has been very sort of, you know, when you get an archive like this, I think it's probably one of the most complete archives of a jazz musician ever uncovered from the 20th century. And so one of the things that emerges from sort of peeling away the layers of the archive is that there's a history of civil rights activism within his career, which has never been brought out before, other than some of when it was happening. But between Martha Glaser and Errol Garner, they sued record companies. They sued Columbia to maintain artistic control over his own music, and they took it to the New York State Supreme Court, and they won. He wouldn't play in segregated houses. He broke certain kind of terrible white supremacist barriers. And so all of that is in this archive, and there's this thread within it that has certain history that is also important. So I think we've sort of looked at this as a really significant cultural gift to the genius of Black people and the music of Black people in America. So I hope that there will be great use of this archive in many ways. There's ideas for exhibits. There is an exhibit actually at the University of Pittsburgh right now called Errol and Martha, which kind of tries to pull out some of the history I'm talking about, along with a lot of the artifacts. All of the awards are there and posters. If you're into the 50s and 60s, the visuals in it are amazing of how people presented this music then. So I hope so. I hope that there will be ongoing photography and exhibits that emerge over the next period.
Just to let people know, Concerts by the Sea, the personnel was Errol Garner on piano, Eddie Calhoun on bass, and Denzel Best on drums.
It's an amazing concert. It's a beautiful concert. And, you know, what else there is in the archive, and people are looking at how to curate other releases from the archive of music. One of the things people don't really know about Errol Garner, other than that he composed the song Misty, mm-hmm. is that he composed over 200 and some odd compositions. And they're original, and they've never been released, and they're beautiful. And so the idea of trying to put some of that out in the world, I think, is also being considered. As a result of doing all of this, we formed the Errol Garner Jazz Project. And the mission of the Errol Garner Jazz Project has been to enhance Errol Garner's cultural and musical legacy, and to take the proceeds from whatever is released and apply it to African-American community-based jazz initiatives. And while there's not a lot of money in the music business, that's the hope.
So if people want to find out more about the Errol Garner Jazz Project,
or the Errol Garner Archive, well, you can go to errolgarner.com, the website, or you can go to the University of Pittsburgh Archive at Errol Garner and see from either end what there is being made available now.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Susan Rosenberg, for providing this information.
You're welcome. Thank you. And thank you for your beautiful, wonderful show.
I've been in touch with her. We have a new Earl Garner project coming out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, hopefully in the next few months. So we're in touch basically many, many times a week. Yeah, she's an important voice.
Are you still playing with Casa Overhaul and Kenny Davis?
Yeah, I am. And I'm working on a project with Casa. And Kenny and I are playing together at the Vanguard, but we'll be playing with Victor Lewis. And that's coming up. Kenny Davis on bass, Victor Lewis on drums, Robbie Coltrane on tenor saxophone, and Wallace Throney, my son, will be joining us as well. And that's August 2nd is our opening night, and we run through the week at the Vanguard.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, certainly looking forward to that. I know that the Vanguard is sort of one of your venue homes.
That's right. I mean, the Vanguard has been, Lorraine Gordon has been such a great supporter of mine through the years, from when my first performance there with Lester Boy. I think Kim Clark was in the band.
Oh, wow. Bassist.
Yeah. And so that was the first time I came in through Max Gordon, who invited Lester. And then after that, through the years, Lorraine has continued to invite me there. And it's just a pleasure to play the room. I'm always humbled by that environment and just grateful to be in there. It's a great place to play music. It really is.
Yeah, it's a nice place.
Deborah Gordon
has been a guest on the show as well, and we actually talked about the Vanguard.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, she's great. I mean, she's holding it down. And
that's right.
You know, that club has been, oh, man, Lorraine is one of those people, right? There's certain people that are part of the community that just really represent stability, and you're depending on that energy from those people who create continuity, and Lorraine is definitely one of those people. There, besides the great musicians, there are certain advocates who really have made a difference in that club. That club, it means so much to the scene.
Yes.
Even still, it
yes.
continues to be such an important place to hear music and to just to remember what it's always been about. So I just really salute Lorraine and Deborah and the folks there that are holding that down.
There's one workshop that I saw you at. Actually, it was in Brooklyn.
Oh, in Bed-Stuy.
Yes, yes. How did you wind up
that
being
involved? That was wonderful.
Yeah, how did you wind up doing that?
Well, Indira, I had kind of a relationship with her over the years through WNYC and the Greenhouse, and now she's the director of the Bedford-Stuyvesant
Restoration
mm-hmm. Group. She's there and creating this wonderful environment for the music and for the arts, and she invited me to come, and that was my old neighborhood. So
okay.
I used to go to the Billie Holiday Theater. You know, there was a recording studio in there, and you know, Lester Boy and Art Ensemble went in there recording. There were people in there at times you never knew who was in there, but there was always kind of an energy around that place. And to see her there now and have a chance to go back there and play and see the work she's doing to keep the music and the arts vibrant in that community is just great.
And that's Indira Etuaru. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, I believe so.
She's the executive director of the Center for Arts and Culture at Bedford-Stuyvesant Restoration Corporation.
Brilliant woman. She's
yes.
really an important force out there in her own right.
I actually just met her probably last year when she put on a production of 12 Angry Men. It's based on a book, 12 Angry Men, of different stories of black men, their experiences in this country, being profiled and what have you. But Indira is a wonderful person doing excellent
work. Yes, she is. Absolutely. And there's a legacy in that place of great black theater, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's just great to see it continuing, and that was a wonderful experience.
You have the dates at the Vanguard from August 2nd through the 7th?
Yeah.
Oh, six nights.
Right. Probably one of the only places in town still doing that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. really wonderful.
And is that two sets a night?
Two sets.
Okay. Well, people can go to the Village Vanguard website, and we'll include it in our On the Bandstand segment, because since you're a guest and have been a guest on Sugar My Bowl, you are always included in our On the Bandstand segment, because that usually features.
Well, thank you. Right.
Because it always features.
I appreciate that.
It features our former guests, previous guests. And by the way, our last guest was Mino Sinelu. And he mentioned that you sang in Creole in his band.
Oh, no. He's so kind. You know, I blend very softly underneath the real voices. But he's so encouraging. He's a great guy.
Well, he...
What a great drummer. What a great...
Yes, percussionist.
Musician.
Yes.
Incredible.
And guitarist.
Yeah. And guitarist. Everything. Yeah.
So... I'm going to forewarn you, because I don't know if he's approached you with this, but he plans to, and he's working really hard to try to get you to sing again, creo.
Oh, no. No.
I mean, come on. If you can sing with Mary Wilson, you can sing with Mino Sinelu.
That's so sweet. Background voices really soft, blending under the real voices.
Well, is there anything else you want to share with the WBAI listening audience, Jerry Allen?
Well, I just want to thank you. It's always great to talk to you and a lot of fun, and I appreciate your support all these years.
Well, I really appreciate our being able to do this.
Thank you.
And thank you so much. We'll see you in August.
All right. Take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And you're listening to the closing moments of Sugar in My Bowl. Our guest for this evening was Jerry Allen, and we definitely thank her for her continued work and generosity of time. She is a busy lady, and we like it like that. What we're listening to right now is The Nurturer. This is from the premium that we've been offering this evening. For a pledge of $25, we will thank you with Perfection from the Mac Power Trio. That's David Murray, Jerry Allen, and Terry Lynn Carrington. This was released earlier this year on Motema Records. Before that, we heard Errol Garner. We heard Where or When from Errol Garner from The Complete Concerts by the Sea. It was recorded live in Carmel, California on September 19th, 1955. And we'd like to thank Susan Rosenberg for participating in tonight's program and for being involved with making this available. And many thanks to her aunt, Martha Glazer. Before that, we heard from this same recording, The Complete Concerts by the Sea, Mambo Carmel, which is the only recording on this release that is an Errol Garner composition. And before that, we heard from The Announcer, because you needed to know the pianist. Before that, we heard from Perfection, The David, Jerry, and Terry Show. Before that, we heard Sound Museum from Ornette Coleman Sound Museum. Sound Museum, Three Women is the name of the release, and that's a 1996 release on Harmelotic Records. And as mentioned, it features Jerry Allen on piano, Charnette Moffett on bass, Donardo Coleman on drums, and of course the genius Ornette Coleman. And before that, we heard Perfection, the title cut, which has additional guests of Charnette Moffett on bass, Craig Harris on trombone, and Wallace Roney Jr. on trumpet. All participants worked with Ornette Coleman. Before that, we heard our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer, Hank Williams. We will be back on August 7th. As a matter of fact, we're trying to get drummer Will Calhoun. If I'm not mistaken, La Nueva Alternativa will be next, and if not, there will be something else even more delightful right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.